Welcome to Profiling Criminal Minds. I'm Dan.
And I'm Dr. Sheila.
That's right. Dr. Sheila. We're very close to closing out the fifth season, so thank you for joining us. I hope you're enjoying this run of episodes as much as we aren't. We had some fun last week, but this week, it's a batch of episodes that you kind of watch them, and then they go right out of your head the minute you done watching them.
Well, that's what I said. I was looking at them and said, I'm going, but I know I watched them, but it was Saturday, right? So I'm going, I'm looking at the IMDb
synopsis,
or not the IMDb,
Wikipedia synopsis.
The Wikipedia synopsis, our usual bad synopsis, and I'm going,
I haven't seen any of these episodes.
Did I watch these? And then I'm going,
literally, do you know what my biggest takeaway from these episodes was?
What?
One time, David Rossi looks at a corpse and it's like, well, it couldn't have been suicide because there's no gunpowder on the residue on the hand. And I'm like, you can't tell that by looking at someone's hands. When you fire a gun with your with a gun in your hand, it doesn't leave black marks on your hand. You have to do chemical testing on a body to know that. And it's like, oh, I mean, the weird part is, it is a sharp drop. How bad it gets once Ed Bernero checks out. It is a sharp drop in quality, and that's what we've been noticing all fifth season. Because, I mean, let's face it, there were plenty of bad episodes in Ed Bernero's run, but it's like, I'm now, like, what, six seasons in reviews, or seven seasons past where Ed Bernero stopped working on it, and you're so used to every episode being this kind of low-grade terrible that when you go back and you watch the early seasons, you're like, this show really had something and cared about the work. And then by here, they're just like, no, we're just phoning it in already. You know, just four seasons in.
Yeah.
Oh, what's it like being... is it weird that I would like to interview Joe Mantegna more than anyone else?
No.
Just be like,
no.
Why? Not why. I mean, he likes paycheck. Like, he likes a job. You know, when you're an actor like him, you know, a job's a job's a job. I get it, but it's so crazy. This is the man who is the lead in all of David Mamet's plays in the 80s. All of them. Like, he wrote movies specifically for this guy to star in. It's crazy to me. Anyway, stop talking about the tragedy of Joe Mantegna. What is our first episode tonight, Doctor?
Me and Reed.
Exactly.
Okay. When the three, it's called Rite of Passage.
All right.
When three, oh, wait a minute. Oh, no. When three decapitated human heads are unearthed in Terlingua, Texas.
Terlingua.
That is right. Yeah, the BAU sets out to profile and track down a serial killer who targets illegal immigrants crossing the Mexican-United States border.
The most topical episode we've ever had?
Oh, jeez, no kidding.
Like, of all of the episodes, because we talk a lot about child abuse comes up a lot in the show, and in a sense, that's always topical. Like, there's always stories in the news about that sort of thing, and it's always depressing, and it's always relevant, but it's like, this one is crazily topical.
Yeah.
Oh my god. Like, I was literally watching a mini documentary thing about racist border patrols and like the racist history of border patrols in America. And it was so funny because it was all about the Minutemen, and it made me so ashamed that they felt the need in this line to say the Minutemen wouldn't do this because they're worried about the bad PR from just killing people. And it's And I'm like, literally, of the three people who started the Minutemen, like the three founding members, one of them is in jail for being a serial child molester, and one of them is in jail for murdering brown people. Like, so no, the Minutemen, like, it's weird to dismiss. And the thing is, it's like, David wants to dismiss the idea that a border patrol was involved in this, but honestly, that's basically what the guy's doing.
Yeah.
Like, he's killing people who are trying to make it through the desert so that he will scare people from coming through the desert. Like, that's what he's trying to do. I'm not saying Donald Trump would like to mount human heads on top of spikes at the border of people who tried to get into America to use as a deterrent like he's Vlad the Impaler. But he does talk a lot about how effective it would be if he put armed men at the border and let them shoot people trying to cross. He talks about that a lot. So it's kind of weird to watch this episode where it's like, this guy is an abhorrent, strange thing. And I'm like, no, this guy is literally doing the subtext of all of your racist border patrol nonsense. He's just doing it.
Yeah.
You know, like, all of you guys and this worldview of Mexican as invaders, it's Texas. It's a frigging Spanish word. You know? This is the last moment I'll get political today. That's not going to happen. That's not true. But I just want to say, let's not forget, until, like, historically speaking, Texas was part of Mexico. Then a bunch of people settled there. And then they fought a war. And do you know what that war was over? Whether or not they got to keep having slaves. The Mexicans said, you can't have slaves anymore. And then the Texas people said, well, then we'll just join America because they'll let us keep slaves. And they had a war over it. And that's why Texas is part of America. That's a true fact. They were very briefly their own nation for like a couple of years, but they really did a bad job of it. So then they just became part of America. But the war for independence from Mexico was fought over the right to have slaves. So there's a history of nastiness underlying all of the Mexican-American relations. And this guy is just a brutal realization of that history. And the show, I'm saying this all now, I'm sorry if I got too political, but the show doesn't mention basically any of this.
Just remember, I didn't stop you.
No, you didn't.
Why would I stop you?
It's just, it's weird that it's like, they act like this guy is, you know, how shall I put this? Like, there's something, like he is
aberration.
Yes, thank you, an aberration. Like, no, he's not. He's just... he is the equivalent of people who blow up abortion clinics. Like, you've got 50 million people talking in the most virulent possible ways and using the most violent terminology, making the most hysterical lies, right? And then one guy goes out and actually does it, and everyone says, oh, well, he's a monster. Well, no, he's just the outgrowth of all of the... he is the literal expression of all of the stuff you say all of the time.
Yeah.
And that's what this guy is in this episode. Like, this guy had every reason to believe that, you know, that he was doing what America needed to do. All right. As you can see, this episode made me pretty mad.
Well, it can make you mad. I mean, just everything that's going on. Like, I've just finally just went, I can't keep watching the news.
Yeah,
and get anything done.
Yeah, exactly. Because you get too upset about it.
Canadian news is bad enough.
I know, and then American news is just
It's just god awful. Just god awful. And the thing is, in Canada, we've got sort of this problem of, well, in Ontario right now.
In Ontario, yeah, we have a terrible premier. We have a terrible premier.
And it just gets worse every day. So we don't want to talk about it. Let's get back to the episode.
Exactly. No, but I'm just saying that it must have been terrible for you saying, oh, God, the racism in America, the incredibly bad politics of our right-wing premier here in Ontario. And you're like, I'll just relax with three episodes of Criminal Minds. And then the first one is about a border patrol guy cutting off Mexican people's heads. What? Oh, that's so terrible. It was a bad, bad bit of luck. It's weird how long it takes them to get to the idea. Like, I'm not saying David was completely wrong to say what he said, that normally the Minuteman guys don't actually do violence. I mean, normally they don't do this kind of violence that we know about.
Or they didn't, because... things are getting really, you know, I mean, I don't. Please don't.
No. You're right. I'm just saying.
Don't give anybody in this friggin' show a pass about that.
No, okay. I know, right, but he says that, and they all dismiss it, and they start digging into drug dealers, and I'm like, why would drug dealers be murdering random civilians crossing the border? Like, there's just no good reason for drug dealers to do that. Oh, well, the coyotes want to make examples of them. But why? These are the people who they need to pay them to get them across the border. Like, if a lot of people get killed by the coyotes, then the coyotes don't have any customers. Like, it's their whole job to keep these people alive. And basically, the coyote's job is to get them across the desert, find them to a place across the border, and then say, okay, now walk that way and flag down the border patrol, and then they have to treat you respectfully, because America's a country of laws, used to be. And here, we're asked to believe that their assumption basically is that coyotes or drug dealers would get people to the border, bring them across, and then cut off their heads and deliver them to the police in the desert.
Like, as a message to who?
As a message to who? Like, who is this message for?
Oh, maybe Donald Trump saw this episode.
And it is a fact.
This would be a good episode.
Well,
this would be a good thing to do because it sends a message.
Jesus. Well, I mean, you say that jokingly, but wait. I'm about to reinforce what you're saying, so you don't have to interrupt. You say that half jokingly, but the fact is a lot of stuff Donald Trump says in speeches, like he went through this whole period where he was talking about all of the crimes of coyotes and drug kingpins. And it was all stuff pulled out of the movie Sicario 2, Day of the Soldado. Like literally, he was just describing scenes from that movie in public and saying, this is proof of how barbaric all of these villains are. So, yeah, I mean, it's not crazy. I mean, the thing is, if Donald Trump watched television, it's not crazy to think he would have seen an episode like this and then thought about it. But Donald Trump definitely has never watched an episode of Criminal Minds. Like, just as a fact, he doesn't watch fictional television. Like, there's just no way. He has a fascinating thing about them is his complete incapability of making cultural references. Like, mm-hmm. Donald Trump will never talk about anything from pop culture ever. Because he has not watched a movie since the 1970s. It's fascinating. Like, the only time he talks about a movie, he's like, Apocalypse Now? Because he's like, he was talking to soldiers and trying to relate their experience to movies he's seen, and the only movie he remembers is Apocalypse Now, and all of the soldiers are like, that's not a good movie to talk to about soldiers. Like, to talk to soldiers about. It does not paint soldiers in a good light.
Doesn't paint the war in a good light. It doesn't paint
America in a good light. But he just remembered that things exploded in it. Because he's a very dumb man. Anyway, this episode, which we keep trying not to talk about because it's so frigging... in this day and age, in 2019, in North America, you cannot look at this episode through a non-political lens.
And they
can't.
No, you cannot look at this episode without looking at what's going on in the United States right now. And, you know, I mean, given these guys, the children in cages, for God's sake. Yeah. Just don't get me started. I mean, you're looking at this episode, and if I was to say anything more about this episode, I'm going, the thing is, yeah, and they had to kill the sheriff, eh?
Yeah. Oh, well, she was also Hispanic, so yes. But what bothered me was, like, the scene where they have to kill, where he wants to kill the sheriff, my response is, like, why did she go out there on her own? Like, even if you thought the cop, even if you trusted the deputy, why are you not telling the FBI about a lead and bringing the FBI along on this? Oh, it's so she can get killed. But the point is, like, I don't understand why his character does that. Why her character does that. Like, I don't get it. I don't understand her actions because it's like, why would you not tell the FBI? What was your plan? Go out there, poke around in the dark when you can't see anything, and then the next day call the FBI and bring them to look at it? Like, I don't know what her character was doing. And again, it's so he could isolate her and have her killed, but it's like, you know, you didn't have to have the sheriff get killed.
Well, and she knows what a racist bastard he is.
Exactly. She knows that this guy's a crazy racist. why on earth are you going with it? It's like she should have thought, oh, but the weird part is, I'm not blaming Joe for this. I blame for Joe for a lot on this show, you might have noticed. Sorry, David Rossi. I've blamed him for quite a bit of things over the years, but I think it's worth saying that it's like, if they had said, this is someone who wants to assert their authority, like who is desperate to assert authority and doesn't feel manly enough and blah, 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 and focused on the fact that people like this tend to be guys who seek out jobs in police, in security, in the armed forces, in prison guarding, right? Well, that would have pointed them at the sheriff pretty quickly, the deputy pretty quickly, wouldn't it have?
Well, and it's not like they haven't done that particular profile before.
They have.
But it's like, I think in year one, so somebody forgot, right?
Yeah. Well, it's like this kind of guy, this kind of person who is going out of their way to murder, you know, these people who are at risk, who are foreigners just trying to get into the country. Like, you really feel like you should focus on, well, who talks most of, you know, most prominently about how these people are awful and deserve to die? It's white racists. Maybe let's start by looking at white racists, because I'm going to tell you something about drug dealers. I'm not pro drug dealers, but they tend to only kill and behead people who were either threatening their business or business competitors, just as a general rule.
Well, no, and that's what the guy said. The FBI knows that it's not drug dealers. Yeah. Now I'm going to say this too, that like this thing is just it's an episode that can just infuriate. It is just so today. Yeah. Like, I don't think it would go on the air today. Nobody would would be so politically afraid to put it on the air today.
I hope.
Well, no, because of course it puts these racists and these people who are, you know, condemning the immigrants in a really, really bad light.
Yeah.
Okay, so no, it wouldn't go on because it's, you know, he says this line about the Minutemen, but, you know, you have these racist
You're
sheriffs.
Right. It's too kind. It is too kind to the racists. I was hoping they wouldn't put it on just because, you know, it depicts a guy murdering brown people in the desert, but you're right. They wouldn't put it on because it's critical of that, which is a really upsetting thing to think about.
Yeah, and now I would say also that if I was, because I think sometimes it's like cutting off the sheriff's hands and doing all of this sort of stuff, like whatever, yeah. You know, and I'm going, oh, this is horrible. But the guy who wrote this is clearly, I would assume, a Mexican-American.
Oh.
His name is Victor De Jesus.
Oh, okay, then probably yes.
Yeah. You know, so maybe he's getting a little of his own back in here, you know, just pointing to this god awful racism that has only gotten worse.
Yeah, that has only gotten worse since this episode aired. Well, honestly, like, I mean, I don't do much stuff about Game of Thrones, but I actually put up a video about the thing that offended me most to Game of Thrones this year because they changed a major plot element. And it ended up having, like, this crazily offensive anti-immigrant message. And they added it to Game of Thrones. Like, you'd think if anything would be safe from a crazy anti-immigrant message, it would be Game of Thrones. But no, it showed up in Game of Thrones.
Well, I'm not going to look at the video. I don't want spoilers.
Don't worry.
Everything.
Watch the episodes yourself. We'll talk about it later. But you're right that it's like, I find the episode so frustrating I find the episode so frustrating because of Joe's defense of the Minutemen. I mean, I'm not going to deny why I find it so offensive. And I mean, I wouldn't have been so offended if 3 days before I watched this episode, I hadn't watched a documentary about how awful the Minutemen were. So yeah, I mean, I was primed to not like it after he said that line. But you're right that it's like, it's weird that this episode that I could find passively horrible is a comparatively speaking good message. Because at least this episode admits that the problem is racist cops.
Yeah.
And it's sad and
racist
that you're right.
Border patrol and racist Minutemen and all of these friggin' racists.
Yeah. Like, it's at least you're right. I mean, the episode's strong because at least it points there's the trouble. It is kind of funny that literally, well, no, you say that the FBI knows it's not the drug dealer right away. And I'm like, yeah, but they still go and interview him, you know?
Yeah, well, yes.
And they don't go and interview him just looking for a lead. Like, they are treating him like he's a suspect.
Well, no, but he got brought in. He didn't get brought in by the FBI, but that's the FBI, true. So that what they said was, well, since he's here already, might as well talk to him.
But it is kind of strange how it's like, literally, the whole episode, I often talk about how they accomplish very little, but for all their theorizing, right? For all of their theorizing about who, like, what kind of person, blah, 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 blah. The only thing that gets them to who the killer is after the sheriff gets murdered, they're like, well, it's obviously not the drug dealer. Who else heard the drug dealer say how he would kill someone who interfered with his business? Oh, well, it was just you and me and the racist cop. Okay, well.
And JJ.
Oh, and JJ. You're right.
But JJ's the one that says, well, I heard you because you could hear everything.
Through the mirror. So, yeah. Just the two, me, the sheriff, and, well, I heard you, so, oh, there you go. All right, so it was the racist cop. Problem solved. But, yeah, it's like.
No, but they could have profiled it and done it. I mean, if they hadn't sort of profiled already the whole thing before in earlier episodes of this show, like, this episode, I guess it just makes me angry because the United States right now, like, this whole business with Trump, and there are lots of Americans who don't agree with it, but somehow or another, this guy got to be president, and nobody seems to be able to get rid of him, and things have gotten worse, and it's the same, but in Ontario, I'm going, you should have known what you were getting. Now you're going to start to complain, and it's the same thing. The farmers now in the States are now really starting, and
to feel the pinch.
Like, you know, What is it Trump said? That was the what's his face, the comedian, the comic that's on that's in the New Yorker, right? Berkowitz, and you know, he makes this thing about, you know, Trump saying, well, they can just all go to Walmart, and you're just cracking
oh,
on.
Oh my God!
Where does Walmart get all their stuff? Does nobody know this?
It's all coming
why
from...
do you have so much in the way of cheap goods?
It's because the food. No, and it's true. The food comes from Mexico and the goods come from China. That's how people can, like, buy stuff at Walmart. That's how Walmart exists.
And,
food
and
from
then,
Mexico and goods from China.
And
that's
then
how there's a Walmart.
Now, Walmart in Ontario started putting in the odd local thing. But
really? Nice.
Yeah. Nice.
But the other
thing is that, of course, all of these farmers and things like that who can't sell their stuff, like the Chinese just slapped, just went,
we're not going to buy any of your rice. We're not going to buy any of your beans. We're not going to buy
soy,
huge amounts of soy. Now they're just not buying in China, and a huge amounts of their beef. Like, it's crazy down there. Like,
well,
all
and
of these
they're
farmers.
Putting on, and I'm going, you voted for them.
Yeah.
I don't feel the least bit sorry for you. You voted for him.
Anyway,
never mind.
We
Let's
got
move
very
on.
Political, but the point of the episode is...
Political.
I found it... the episode is political. It's, like, it's not dishonest to get political about this episode, because it's a very political episode. But I guess my takeaway is, and I think you can see why I'm saying this, is that it doesn't go hard enough at the mindset, the worldview that created this racist, murderous cop.
Well, let me put it this way. Yes. And that is very much true. But it was 2010.
It was 2010. Obama was president. Blah, 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 blah. But it's just like,
who
I really, you wanted to, I know, who could believe this is where we'd be just 10 years later, right?
Yeah.
And that's the crazy thing about this episode. All right. So next up we have...
1,000 words.
Aww. Because that's what a picture's worth. Get it? Because of the tattoos? They're being clever. I'm just being mean now. Sorry.
You're being mean.
I'm being very mean. All right. Hit it. Go.
Okay. Yes. when a Tallahassee, Florida college student goes missing, not the same night, but anyway, a few days before a man commits suicide, and local authorities discover photographs and newspaper clippings of women who have been killed over the past decade. Okay, yeah, there's not a period there. Anyway, maybe that is a comma. The BAU juggles profiling the deceased man and rescuing his latest victim. No, they don't juggle it. They have to profile him to find the victim.
So I'm very curious about my my review of this episode. I almost wanted to go back and check because I'm like, the thing that got me most when I was watching this episode was, so this guy's got like thousands and thousands and thousands of journals, right? And they're like, oh, well, that must have been part of his treatment, journaling, you know, because he was in jail and like therapy, blah, 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 blah. So he must have been journaling a lot. And that's why he had all these journals. So I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. I totally understand why you would think that. Good logic. But then we get this weird thing where it's like we're asked to believe that this guy made all of these journals and like never once in any of the journals mentioned that, oh, I've got a wife who helps me kidnap and rape and torture women. In thousands and thousands of pages of journals, he wouldn't mention this wife he's got the whole time.
Well, that's what Reed says. He said he made one mistake.
He only made one mistake. He said we once. But it's like, why wouldn't he? These were journals for himself. Why would he be writing fake journals? The journals were for him.
Ours, so... not to question why. Ours, but to accept
okay.
and pass over.
No, but it's just so weird. The idea that it's like, and the thing is that they create this, like, they create this weird fiction where he's made thousands upon thousands of pages of journals, right? But he has completely left out his wife for some reason. And then he's also left out, you know, but then he just leaves the journals for the police to find. Well, why not just not leave the journals for the police to find? Like, why bother making all of these fake journals just so you can mislead the cops when you could just not make journals? The fact that you have, like, if you want to prove that you're the killer, fact that you've got all of the women's faces with their death dates tattooed on your body is plenty for the cops to find.
Yeah, no. But I don't think he made, he didn't make the journals for the cops to find. He made the journals for himself, basically, knowing that maybe somebody could find them. No, it's not full of lies. It's full of one lie. That he has a partner.
No, but I mean, I think considering his wife was an active participant in all the murders, that means everything he writes about the murders is a lie.
But she's his tattooist.
And also his partner in the murders. Like, she's got a woman chained up in the next room. She knows she's involved with a serial killer.
Yeah.
Like, she's involved in every step of his crimes.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
And
that's my
point. Like, why would he write? I just don't understand the character's motivation for writing a fake journal leaving his wife out.
Well, it's because he is a narcissist. And his wife is not there because he's madly in love with his wife or anything. His wife is there because, well, she's going to come in handy because it doesn't
she's
going to
give him
a help
child
a partner,
and she's going to have someone to
child
and it's someone
to
record his actions.
Yeah.
Oh no, absolutely.
Blah blah blah.
But
you know, and
my
she's
point
that
is,
tattooist.
And,
yeah.
Oh no, and she's a tattooist, and that helps. But my point is that as someone who's like this kind of controlling, you know,
well,
monster,
he doesn't think he's writing his journal about him. She doesn't really play any role as far as he is concerned in any of it.
You know that's not true. No, I'm saying you're doing a lot of work.
True, but I'm telling you how he would think.
Ah, okay. I'm just saying you're doing a lot more work than the show did to explain this man's actions.
Well, yeah, but you're bringing this up as if, you know, like,
no,
I mean,
I think it is a big I think the idea, the amount of work it would take to like specifically when your wife is a part of every, you know, moment of your life, to specifically go out of your way to write a journal that doesn't mention her at all takes a lot of effort and time.
Yeah, okay, let's let that go now. Okay,
I'm letting it go. I'm saying it's irretrievably stupid. I'm letting it go. It's just irretrievably stupid that he would have a fake thing. You could have just had him not have the journals.
See, the difference is I don't call it fake, but yes, they didn't need the journals.
Especially since, as you point out, like the tattoos are the real lead. Like he's got these tattoos like chronicling all of his murders. Well, look for a tattoo artist. Because guess what? You can't just go to a store and ask for that kind of work. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like of all of these pictures of dead women.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
they have a tattooist.
Yeah, because it would be very weird to go in with pictures of all of these different women. And, oh, God. How strange is the ultraviolet light tattoo?
Weird.
Well, and I didn't actually understand the ultraviolet light tattoo, because it's like, your body is already covered with tattoos of all the women you killed? Like, the fact that, and you didn't, when you had that ultraviolet tattoo made, you didn't think the cops were going to catch you. Like, so why is it a secret that you've got a baby?
Well, no. I don't think that's the reason.
Okay.
I think it's that if you take a look at all of those lines and then, of course, the picture of the fetus, mm-hmm. first of all, they would have been put on afterwards. And if they had made it real ink.
Yeah.
Because they are going to put a picture of the baby when the baby is born.
Oh, so you think the fetus was there just as a little guide to them, not and that's where they'll put the baby
They wanted to put it there. But it would have destroyed all of the rest of the tattoos if it had been your real ink.
Okay.
Like, I didn't have
a problem. I see what you're saying. Yeah. All right. I can see the logic in that.
Yeah, there's a structure to what they've been doing. And all of a sudden, you know, like, they want some notation while she's gestating and the fetus is growing. And so
they've decided to do this
whole shtick, right? Okay. They don't go into it in the show, but yeah, that's why it works.
You're right. I could believe that motivation. Mm-hmm. It's just, I guess what rankled me about this episode is just how much of this killer's MO seems to have been specifically crafted to have the only purpose it serves is so that information gets slowly parceled out over an hour of television.
Welcome to Criminal Minds.
No, but it's like so often on Criminal Minds, they have weird twists happen, but you can understand why the killer's doing it beyond just, well, we need information to only come gradually to the characters.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's what I find weird. I am being very hard on this episode. You're absolutely right.
Harder.
Hey, Hank Schrader's in this episode. Let's be positive about that.
Yeah.
Hank Schrader's in this episode, and he's perfectly good. He's the cop who's gotten too close to the family of the missing girl.
Yeah.
And that's nice.
And we can just go, thank God she survived.
Yes. It all worked out well for her. It's interesting, because it's an episode where they balk at the three-victim standard, because they don't have room for it in the story they're telling. And with the killer already dead at the start of the episode, right?
Yeah.
Or killing himself at the start of the episode, like, there's no one to really be that threat. And so they're focused on the story of his pregnant widow and all of her troubles with her baby. Right. So it's like, I get why they structured it that way. And it's weird for the show to not have someone get killed halfway through, but it is a refreshing turn.
Yeah. Well, it's Bonero wrote it.
Oh, really? Okay. I get that. This seems like
it was. It's different, and it is different. It was interesting, and of course, she was going to kill the girl, but then she ends up going into labor, and then the baby's born. She has all sorts of problems, and she dies in childbirth.
Yeah, and is very disappointed that she's had a boy.
Yeah,
because this guy's got a lot of problems. God, I wonder if he was abused when he was a child.
Well, this guy, and then, of course, she was, you know, and her father, she doesn't want another male, and I'm just going, yeah, but, you know, you really think that having a daughter would have solved any of those issues?
Of course not.
Your husband, well, no, your husband murders women.
Yeah. But the thing is, it's interesting because she went right from this monstrously abusive, definitely molested her father to like transferred everything over to an equally, molested by her father, equally monstrous man. Like, so she meets him when visiting her father and she transfers it just right over to him immediately.
Yeah.
And it's kind of interesting, but it's like, again, feels psychologically true. Like,
yeah.
Because if you don't deal with it, you fall into these patterns. And then it's interesting because then they have her, have immediately just shacked up with this guy, helped him with his murders, you know, tattooed to keep it. And it's like, yeah, this woman is every bit as much of a victim as all of the women he killed. And in a way, there's this extra tragedy to it because she spent her whole life as this victim, right? She spent her whole life as this victim of one man after another and has completely accepted that role for herself.
Yeah.
Ugh. It's a really rough ending, this episode.
Yeah, as I said, why the hell she would have wanted a daughter? Yeah. I guess she didn't want a son because she thought the son would end up like her father and her husband. So
I hope.
That would have been why, but that just, we're not all sitting here saying that she was the smartest bulb in the pack at all. The massive abuse that she had been submitting to all her life would just have not allowed her to.
Well, she couldn't love a son. Yeah. Well, I don't know if she could have loved a son just based on how she had been treated by men her whole life.
She wouldn't be able to love a daughter either.
No, that's true.
So, I mean, it's just impossible.
It's probably the best thing for that baby that his mother died in childbirth, which is a horrible thing to say, and I should not have laughed while saying it. I apologize for that. But it really is probably the best thing for that baby. Like, that's gonna, you had a much better life going, you know, being adopted. You know what? Healthy white baby, I'm sure it had no trouble getting adopted by a rich family, like, right away.
Yeah.
You know, there's specifically no grandparents coming for that kid.
No.
But yeah, no, it's an interesting episode because they do follow a logical investigative trail.
Yeah.
Right. This week, I don't think I have any problems with any of the steps they took. I'm usually so critical about that stuff, but it's like, okay, look at the tattoos, focus on tattoo artists. Okay. Well, underneath all the other the tattoo artists they go to talk about it is like, well, this tattoo was clearly made to cover up a prison tattoo. Okay. So the guy, so it's like where, and I don't know if the different types of tattooing are specific to various prisons. You know,
I have no idea.
But I don't know anything about prison tattoo culture, so I'm not going to say that that's accurate or not. But it's interesting because they're like, okay, well, what is the prison culture that gave rise to this tattoo he's got? It's an interesting idea that the show presents. Whether it's 100% believable, blah blah blah, doesn't matter. It's like it's an interesting investigative trail the characters follow, and then of course they get to, okay, well, he likely had it done at this prison at this time. Might he have, given that he only got out of prison there, might he have met of his partner there? And then they just follow this as they follow it completely logically all the way down. Yeah. And I like that. Like, I really do like that about the episode. And it's like, I understand every investigative step you're taking and I'm on board for all of it. So I thought that was a nice touch.
Yeah. It's funny. The yawn. Yeah. This is definitely one of those episodes that works well right from beginning to end. It's well written. It's thought through, right to the end, except, of course, JJ has to question whether this child will be okay. And I'm going,
kid's going to be fine.
Okay, I guess you need to be reassured. Okay.
I guarantee that kid's going to be fine. I stand by my statement.
Let's go back to Lightning.
Exactly. Lightning is a perfect, riding the Lightning, perfect example. You know, kid of two serial killers. He did fine for himself.
Yep.
You know, like, and this is a situation where, like, this kid hopefully will not be neglected at all. Like, because the kid in Riding the Lightning, he was in this messed up family for like a year and a half, and then his parents both went to jail and he ended up with a good family. Whereas this kid, from birth, he's going to be put with, hopefully, first medical professionals, and then with people who want him to do well. So I think, yeah, if anything, baby, this kid's got an even better chance than the kid from Riding the Lightning.
Yeah.
Yeah, if only this woman had been self-aware enough to understand that the baby should have been raised by somebody else. But this lady has her own problems. I'm not going to criticize her for not getting there.
No.
She had plenty of problems. So, yeah, like Ed Bernero, we've often said that, I mean, he's got his own bad episodes, but generally this, he cares more, he does more interesting episodes, and he's willing to be, you know, real about the psychological stuff that we're always complaining about.
Yeah.
So, way to go, Ed Bernero. Thumbs up to this episode.
Yep.
Next up.
Exit Wounds, the last one.
Oh,
this week. Yeah, I know. When three...
just go for it.
When three Alaska civilians are killed over the course of a single week, the BAU attempts to identify a serial killer with an obsession for hunting. Meanwhile, Garcia accompanies the team and finds herself in a dangerous situation.
So when the episode starts, a woman is cleaning fish, crabs? Anyway, cleaning some sort of seafood at the dock, the day's catch. And her employee is like, hey, do you want me to walk you home? And she's like, yeah, it's fine. I don't mind cleaning fish. I clean fish and walk home all the time. Don't worry about it. And you're like, uh-oh, we're going to find out there's a murder on the loose. And, this poor lady. Then one scene later, we find out that a murderer has killed two people in the past week. Why is she alone after dark? When a murderer in this town of 1,000 people has killed 0.2% of the population. Wait, I did that math wrong. 0.02% of the population in the past week, right? Why is she alone? Why is she doing anything alone? Why is anyone out after dark? It's insane. And then he keeps being able to kill people who are like out after dark. Oh, well, this guy wants to leave town, was talking about leaving town, so he tracked him down and killed him. Yeah, he was planning to leave town because there's a killer on the loose, and still he was walking around alone after dark. What is wrong with people in this town?
The same thing that was wrong with the people that went to the cinema.
Oh, don't get me started on the people who went to the cinema.
I'm sorry.
Jesus Christ.
It's the same.
But you're right, it's the exact same thing. Like, they have this thing where, like, a horrible crime has happened, and people in the town don't change their behavior at all. Like, no, everyone would be super paranoid. Everyone would be carrying guns all the time, which we know they all own, because they live in Alaska.
Yeah.
Like, something like, I don't know what the actual number is, but something along the lines of 60% of people have guns in Alaska. Why is anyone going out at night unarmed in this episode? You know? It's crazy to me. It is legit, like, that any of this could happen. After the first murder, okay, it was a hunting accident, the guy ran away, you got investigated. Which is literally what happened. That's the plot of the episode. There had been a hunting accident, the guy found out he was into murder, so he started killing. And I'm not saying it's okay that you did a hunting accident and then ran away. Of course it's not. If there's a hunting accident, you gotta go to the cops.
Yeah.
Dick Cheney. But what bothers me is, after the second murder, everyone in town now knows there's a killer on the loose, and they don't change their behavior at all. It's insane.
Totally and completely, but, you know.
You just have to accept it.
Well, I mean, the whole episode, you know, and when they think, well, it's this kid that came back, you know, and they didn't go any further. Like, why they, I don't know.
Why they just assume, oh, God. The moment that Garcia says, why didn't he kill you? Like, why didn't he kill you? He just ran away. And then she's like, it must be the guy who runs the hotel. After all, he knew I was just the tech person and didn't have a gun. So he didn't see me as a threat. And I'm like, but that makes him more likely to attack you than to run away. If he didn't think you were threatening but was worried you saw him, wouldn't he stab you? He was acting like someone who thought that they had been caught by an FBI agent. Like, she completely misunderstands the very basic actions of the killer, and it makes them all put the wrong person in jail, which gets that guy's mother killed. Hi, Garcia, you got someone's mother killed.
Well, he was going to kill the mother anyway because he blamed her for sending him away.
But he only had the opportunity to kill the mother because her son was in jail.
Yes, that's right. Like, that's right. Yeah.
That's true. Yeah. Like, and I just don't understand why I mean, first off,
no,
Garcia should not be guessing at people's motivations. That's not her job. But they all kind of accept that.
Rationale. No, but I think she initially said that he couldn't have done it because he's too techie. That's at the beginning.
No, she says he must be the killer because he knew I wasn't the tech person, so I wasn't a threat. That's why he didn't try to kill me. That's what she says. Because of all the people in town, the only one...
But it's after the first time when they're talking about him, she says, no, it couldn't be him.
Yeah, but then after the murder has happened right outside and Garcia witnessed it, she's like, it could be him because he knew I didn't have a gun. That's why he didn't try to kill me. And I'm like, no, the opposite of true. The killer obviously thought the person had a gun. That's why he ran away from the person rather than trying to kill them. Like, he must have thought you had a gun. And the fact that he didn't think you had a gun means it's probably not the one person who knows you.
Sorry. But you don't blame Garcia for making stupid...
No, I blame the other people for listening to her logic.
Yes.
You know, like they arrest the guy because someone's... because Garcia's... they arrest the guy for two reasons. One, someone said he liked... teacher said he liked hunting a lot. Two, Garcia has her ridiculous wrong profile. Those are the two pieces of evidence they go on when they throw this guy in jail for a night. And throwing this guy in jail for a night is what gets his mother killed. So yeah, I do kind of blame Garcia for this.
Okay.
I mean, more I blame the person who was out walking around in the middle of the night when there was a crazed psycho on the loose. Yeah, sometimes we bring heartbreak on ourselves. It's more his fault, but...
Well, it goes to blame Garcia. Again, you've got all these people in this friggin' town who know there's somebody out killing people.
Yeah.
And they're all walking around.
Yeah, they're all just walking around.
At night. Yeah. I thought they had a curfew.
You'd think. You know, you'd think they would have a curfew. Like, why is this guy able to just walk around at night? I didn't understand it at all.
Yeah.
This episode bothered me so much. And not without cause. I think I have good reason to be troubled by the events of this episode. It's very dumb. And although the one thing I kind of liked was the rationale to bring Garcia out is that the internet is so bad in Alaska that she won't be able to help them if she's not actually there.
There, yeah.
Like, oh, Alaska, you've got problems.
The middle of nowhere.
I gotta say, I don't know where they went to film this, but they do manage to make it look like a small fishing town.
Yeah.
I don't know where they went, but it was kind of nice. So, let's talk about the killer. So, he was adopted? And so, he was adopted and he didn't like being left alone, and so he's going to murder anyone trying to leave town.
I suppose it's more complicated than that, but the thing is, did I understand it? No. His parents always knew there was a problem. It's a small town. You'd think they could take care of a problem, but it goes back to, I don't know what these writers sometimes are trying to say about small towns.
Yeah.
You know, some of it is true, some of it is, but you go back to the episode earlier on, it's like there's a lot of regurgitation of episodes here in structure.
And we're seeing recurring themes too.
Yeah, very, very much so, that, you know, you had the small town with the kid and the incest thing, and
the incest,
you know, they don't,
fire starter, yes.
They kick him out, whereas in this case they didn't, I guess it was different because they didn't kick him out, it was just that his best friend left, and his best friend never had any... took care of him, and then his best friend had nothing to do with him afterwards.
Yeah, because he moved down to Anchorage or wherever.
Well, he moved to go to university, right, college.
Yeah.
And then ended up having to come back home. Not that he really wanted to come back home. And then,
but the mother needed and the help. And
the town is dying. And
yeah, so there's economic stresses. There's personal stresses. I get it. But I guess what got me in it, right, was the idea. Like, don't in towns this small, do you not know who, like, do people not know who the creep is? Because if this kid was this creepy, and when everyone finds out he's the killer, they're all like, okay, that makes sense. This kid's creepy, right? And that seems to be the universal reaction. I feel like in a town this small, like you say, there should be gossip about who the local creep is, right?
Well, they should have all known, and the minute it started, they should have thought of him.
Yeah, that, like, shouldn't their first thought have been, well, this kid's really creepy, and this kid's got a lot
of
problems.
Well, and besides, what's the
maybe look into him.
When was the woman who had the fishing boat going to leave?
Soon. Like, she wasn't leaving that day, but she was planning, I think, to leave at the end of the season.
Yeah, you know, so I thought, okay, well, yeah. It's a strange, okay, like, I can see he focuses in on the people who are leaving, so it mm-hmm. seems as if it's, it doesn't hurt the town so much because they're going to leave anyway. Like yeah. We never really get into this kid's
psychology at all.
Thinking and psychology, right? Like, why did he pick these? Why did he pick people who were leaving?
Yeah, because you're right. They profile, like, all the stuff I'm saying about him wanting to kill people who are leaving, that's all just their profile. We never actually get inside the kid's head or have him hear a description. I mean, as far as we know, he literally could just be killing whoever he finds out at night, like, walking around after dark.
Yeah.
As far as we know about this kid.
Yeah. Like, it's not clear. Like, they construct this for him. I'm not sure that we ever sort of
have it confirmed in any meaningful way.
No, because he does kill the other kid's mother.
Yeah. And
so
she wasn't going anywhere.
And she wasn't going anywhere. And so then they have to get another motivation for that one. Oh, well, yeah, but she's the one that sent his best friend away. Okay,
that's
yeah.
A bit
okay.
of a stretch there, guys.
Well, no, now we're switching motives and switching everything else. And he was just working his way up to killing this woman. He would have killed her anyway.
Really, though?
Really, though?
Yeah.
I I'm not going to go into it too much, but
I agree with you.
There's not much you can buy about this episode.
Yeah, like, this episode is very troubling for a bunch of reasons. Like, yeah, like, we never get a good window into the guy's head. Oh, and then at the end, there's a posse to try and kill him, but the cops interrupt the posse.
Well, yes, you can't do that. Yeah,
no, you can't just have a posse.
You killed my mother.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Don't you have any sympathy for this kid that you took care of for all those years? I know it's your mother. I know it's your mother.
And I mean, you understand his emotions. And as we know, the real villain here is the mother who covered up for the evil kid.
Yeah.
That's the real villain here.
Well, what I call this is a perfunctory episode.
It is, because
it's okay. Like, you know, it kind of
it's fine. It gets the job done.
Yeah, it gets the job done, but there's nothing in us who are, and in those of us who are doing the meta-narrative thing.
Yeah, there's not much to sink your teeth into except that Garcia definitely got somebody killed. I'm now, by the way, the hill I'm willing to die on is that Garcia definitely got someone killed this week. So there you go. There's that element to it, which is interesting from the narrative, which is like, don't let Garcia into the field and start jumping to conclusions. That's pretty terrible.
I mean,
beyond that,
she shouldn't be in the field.
She shouldn't be in the field. Be in the field at all. But
and the small
that,
town thing really creeps her out. Every time she goes to a small town, she gets creeped out.
Yeah, like, she's just not comfortable in these locations. She's not really helpful to them there. Like, all she has to offer is this guesstimation at what the killer thought or knew that is wrong and arguably gets somebody killed. Like, she doesn't actually provide much help this week. Oh, although she does comfort someone as they've been stabbed to death. Although, in a creepily narcissistic moment, she, like, thinks of that as a, she sees that through her own her own experiences getting shot, and it's like, it really, I didn't want to die with, you know, the last thing I saw being the face of the guy who shot me. And I'm like, that's great, but, you know, the guy got stabbed to death, and you hovering over him didn't make it a ton better, Garcia.
Not like he knew who you were.
Yeah, it's like, oh, a stranger is now staring me in the face. Great. You know, it's not like you managed to get his family there or something. But yeah, like, the fundamental parts of the episode, which is, there's so much plot wrong in this episode with why are all these people just walking around when there's a killer on the loose, with the fact that no one in the town seems to know who the creepy kid in town is, who's the most likely victim, like all of that.
No, the most likely killer.
Most likely killer. The mother who covers up for her murderous son, and then they don't really get into that very much. Like, there's a bunch of this episode plot-wise that really just leaves you kind of going, eh. And then on top of that, you've got this Garcia stuff, and the fact that they operate on this theory that doesn't make the most sense. Like, they're like, how's he targeting people? Well, fundamentally, he might just be targeting people who are wandering around at night. Like, yeah. If they had never for a minute talked about how he's targeting people, I don't know if it would change how they chased them, except for the fact that, like, the one time you can say how is he targeting people is important is the one time he actually went into a specific person's home and specifically murdered that person.
Yeah.
The rest of the time, he literally was probably just wandering around, and when he ran into somebody on the street at night, he stabbed them to death. The one time he actually went into someone's house, he obviously meant to kill that person. And yeah, once you know that he meant to kill that person, that's the person you got to focus on. And once they say, okay, well, he meant to kill this one person, who does she know, who's she connected to? Well, they get to the killer right away.
Yes.
It's like,
yeah.
If he hadn't killed a person he was actually angry with, would they never have caught this kid?
Well, no, and plus, yes, as I say, I mean, it may be that so many people are leaving this town that it was just an accident.
Yeah, it was just an accident that people
he killed were leaving
people
town.
Were planning to leave, yeah. Yeah, so it's like, they do a lot based on this theory that doesn't seem to be based on anything from his actions, and we get no confirmation of it from the killer. So yeah, even the psychological part of the episode does not feel like it's resolving anything, and it doesn't feel like it's answering any questions
no,
we have.
No.
So yeah, very perfunctory episode, an episode that, forgettable, unimportant, and honestly... Exit wounds? Because I guess people were leaving town? Is that the pun there?
Yeah,
is that what
the pun
was?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah. Them and their puns. All right. So, yeah, just not a great wrap-up to the season here, guys. Speaking of, what are the two episodes we're going
to
be covering next week?
The Internet is Forever.
Oh, is that the snuff film episode? Is that the one about the guy who's making snuff films of him killing women, and he like gets people to subscribe to his YouTube channel of people
don't you
of him
know,
killing women?
Don't you know that? Yeah, but that, yes, you're right.
That is the episode. Okay,
yeah.
Sorry.
I was just going to say, but don't you know there are no...
There's no such thing as snuff films? Yes.
And then the next one is Darkest Hour.
I'll have a lot to say about our Darkest Hour. Yeah, okay. there's going to be a lot to say about that one.
Okay.
So I'm kind of, in a way, glad that this is where we're wrapping up the season, because there's a lot to say about that one. All right, so that should be good. If you're following along with us, your homework next week is episode 522 and 523, The Internet is Forever, and Our Darkest Hour Part 1. I don't know if the 601 is called Our Darkest Hour Part 2, or if I'm just, you know, remembering it wrong. So join us back here for that. Otherwise, if you've got any questions for us, if you have any comments, or if you'd like to suggest some profiling-related fiction for us to watch, I would encourage you to do so by emailing us at profilingcriminalminds@gmail.com.
Yeah.
Let's see. I think that's that. So until next time, we'll see you back here next week. But until then, au revoir.
And maybe I'll be awake for the next episode.
Well, these
have
in,
a good
in your defense, I just want to say, in your defense, these episodes weren't helping keep you awake.
Well, no, these episodes were just not good enough to kind of short circuit.
Yes. your exhaustion.
The fact that I've done 47 minutes of cardio before I started this.
Seriously, though, and just on a final note, yeah. If we got way too political for you at the start of this episode, I am sorry, but we're hardcore Canadian liberals, and we are disgusted by the state of America right now. So it was just going to come up.
Yeah, but you're just going to have to one more time.
if you're just here for the Criminal Minds, we apologize, and we promise we'll be back to just talking about Criminal Minds next week. We'll see you there.
Have a good evening. Bye.
Profiling Criminal Minds is a member of the Kinks Podcasting Network.